one body bag or two?
Hello, hello, guys, and welcome again to another episode of Tea Time Horror Stories, or Tea Time Horrors, whichever one you like, whichever tickles your fancy. It is me again, Sam, saying hello, and it is the week of the murder. Yay, and do I have a juicy one for you guys today.
It's her specialty.
It is my specialty. So again, we have Joe, who's always here. He's a constant. And we have my brother James again here. Say hello, James.
Hello.
Yep. So again, we have James, Joe, and myself, and it's going to be a bit of a juicy one today, and it's going to be a bit of a long one. We are covering murder. In this case, we are actually covering a serial killer. A very notorious one. Everyone knows.
Ooh, ah.
There you go. There's my oohs and ahs. Ooh, ah, ooh. But for now,
say hi to the crickets also, because I'm pretty sure you can hear them.
Oh yeah, I can totally hear the crickets. It's not a sound bar that we have or anything like that. You can actually hear crickets because, again, I live in the middle of nowhere.
Ish.
Our nearest neighbors is not
about a quarter of a mile away.
Exactly. All right. So we live in the middle of nowhere. You might even hear dogs barking, coyotes in the background. Believe me, it's not a sound bar. It's just nature.
We also have werewolves and werebears.
But it's not.
And
it's not full moon.
And shapeshifters.
Shapeshifters. Yeah, they're here too.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
They're everywhere.
Speaking of which, I think it's the new moon coming soon. If not, it's already passed.
Something's coming eventually. So, what are we drinking? Literally no one has really tea today.
I have a tea-ish, but go ahead.
I am drinking a soda pop because, you know, either I go with my tea, my chai tea lattes, or I stick to what I like, something sugary, and it's a soda pop today. James is starting his new 45-day-ish diet thing.
No,
so
it's 45 days of straight keto. So I'm drinking a gallon of water a day. It has to be done. It helps with the digestive, especially on keto. You get no carbs, means you get barely any fiber, so you need the liquids.
Yes, so James is just drinking water, no teas for him. And I think Joe is the only thing that's closest to a tea right now.
Closest to a tea. I have Rebel brand turmeric tea, also called like golden milk, and it's a revitalizing elixir. And it's got whole turmeric, ginger, cardamom, and coconut milk. So some other ingredients in there, but those are the big ones that are in there. It's actually pretty good. I drink it all the time, but can be a little bit grainy if you let it sit for too long.
Too grainy. I've tried it before, and I just can't get over the grain in it. So that, yeah, it's short and simple what we're drinking today. How is everyone feeling today? Anything new we'd like to shout out to our fans out there? We're thinking, okay, hear this. I'm gonna put this out to the fans. We have been thinking about coming out with a name for our listeners, like our tea timers, or some sort of classy, catchy name.
What's the next holiday?
Mother's Day is the next holiday.
Yeah, so that's not going to work.
Yeah, so we're trying to come up with this nice, catchy phrase that we can call our listeners. If you guys have any cool or awesome ideas, please shoot them our way. Again, we're on all social media, such as Facebook and Instagram. And just let us know. What do you guys want to be called? Just let us know. So far, we have tea timers.
Can we call them kings? I like kings.
Kings?
I don't know why. Kings just sound good. Or Steve.
Why kings? What if we have queens?
That's a good point.
Didn't think about that. You got to think of everyone, the whole demographic. So, that being said, this week has not really been that eventful, really.
Especially today.
Nope.
Not really.
Just been lazy. We've been D&Ding it out. Nothing completely new.
Matter of fact, we might be doing a game after this recording.
Actually, yes, we plan it. We pretty much might be doing a game after this recording. We do D&D quite often now. We're nerds. Nerds.
At least once a week.
At least. Yeah.
So
the D&D portion, not being nerds. We're nerds all the time.
That's just our life. You guys will be listening to this. It might be the 30th of April, so May will be right around the corner. That being said, I'm going to say happy birthday to a few people whose birthdays are in May. Do you guys remember whose birthdays are in May?
Grandma. My dad's.
Grandma's is in February. Why do you keep thinking hers is in May?
I don't know. Cinco de Mayo is May.
Cinco de Mayo. That's dad's.
That's my dad's
Joe's
birthday.
Dad's birthday.
Oh, no shit.
Happy birthday to Chris, Joe's dad.
My papa.
Happy birthday to Yelly. Yelly's birthday's in May as well. Mm-hmm. And happy birthday to Josh as well. Josh's birthday, I think, is in May as well.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure, actually. I probably might have said someone else's name in there that's not supposed to be there. But, you know, we have all the month of May to decide that. So happy birthday to those people. And another shout out to Shiitake Podcast. Please give them a listen. My, my bestie Shannon is there. It's hard
to keep track with times.
If you guys listen to anime, if you guys are really interested in anime and you really want to hear reviews about them or even give them recommendations, give Shiitake Podcast a listen. They're really, really cool. They talk about reviews about, you know, anime. Give them a listen. You can find them on any major podcast place such as Spotify and Apple. So that being said, let's jump into it because we have a bit of a doozy today.
It's going to be a long one.
Well,
no snoozing. Get your coffees, damn it.
Right. Make sure you guys have your coffee. Make sure you have your tea, whatever drink to help you keep you energized, because I'm going to be covering a serial killer today. And can anyone guess what serial killer I'll be covering?
I already know what you're covering.
Joe knows because I talk about it all the time because I'm so excited.
I don't because I'm supposed to play dumb.
We're covering John Wayne Gacy.
Oh.
John Wayne
Gacy. I do know who that is. I'm usually the one not supposed to know. I mean, I don't know.
Right? So, let's get into who John Wayne Gacy is. Alrighty, so John Wayne Gacy, a.k.a. the Killer Clown, or as most people know him as, Pogo the Clown, was born March 17th. Hey, his birthday just passed.
Whoa.
March 17th. 1942, was an American serial killer and rapist who sexually assaulted, tortured, and murdered about 33 young men between 1972 to 1978. Creepy. Mostly in the Cook County, Illinois. He was 5'9" and rather large in size, weighing over 230 pounds.
That's not that big!
He was a big boy.
Sorry, it was kind of loud. Yeah. That's not that big.
Actually, that was like his lowest weight.
Damn.
Yeah, he was a pretty chunky guy. He was married twice, divorced twice, with two kids named Michael and Christine. That being said, you guys want to know a little sugar cube about him?
That's why we're here.
If I don't already know it.
You probably don't.
Probably not.
Maybe you do. So the little sugar cube, John Wayne Gacy, he had an IQ of 118, which is pretty high. Anything over 140 is considered gifted or a genius, while Ted Bundy had 136 and Ed Kemper and Jeffrey Dahmer both had 145. So he was actually pretty high up there on the IQ, meaning he was a pretty smart guy.
Yep.
So he was kind of like number 4 in the smart level. That was just a little sugar cube I wanted to share with you guys.
High IQ.
Very high IQ.
Very high IQ.
So all of Gacy's known murders were committed inside his Norwalk Park branch house. All but one of his victims were murdered by either asphyxiation or strangulation with a makeshift tourniquet. His first victim was stabbed to death. Most of his victims were either forced or deceived into going into his ranch house. Gacy buried 26 of his victims in the crawl space of his house, while 3 other victims were buried elsewhere on his property. And the last 4 victims were discarded over the Des Plaines rivers.
You said his first
victim... You said 24 bodies under his house?
Yes. Yep.
But you said his first victim died...
26.
Died of stabbing, but... Didn't his victim survive the first initial attack, and then didn't Gacy kind of wake up the next morning and he was gone? He tried to find him or something? I thought I heard something about that.
No, that's a different thing.
That's a different person?
We'll get there when we get there, Joe. You're like, you're probably thinking another victim, probably of all the documentaries
It's riveting
and watched
stuff. I like watching it too.
Yes. So, I don't really want to say it, but I am I'm a fan of John Wayne Gacy.
You're a fanboy, a fangirl.
I'm an enthusiast.
You're not a nerd. You're a murder enthusiast.
I'm a murder enthusiast. Okay,
see, that's kind of creepy.
I'm not a fangirl. I'm a murder enthusiast. I like that one. So I find fascination when it comes to serial killers or anything that has to do with true crime. So it's not just serial killers. And John Wayne Gacy's case has always been just a little bit interesting, in my opinion, because I think there's more to his case than what meets the eye. Honestly, I think more people were involved, in my opinion. But
interesting theory. I actually wouldn't have thought that.
Exactly. So when you guys hear what I have, I want you guys to keep in mind that all this is supposedly done by one person.
Well, yeah, jeez. That's what I assumed.
Yes. So, but there are theories going around that there was more than one person involved. He was just the scapegoat.
more or less suggesting... Okay, so now I remember what I was thinking about. So is this something that's more recent that's come out? Or is this like actual theories that other people
have had? These were actual theories. And I actually, when I was reading his case and reading a lot about him, because I do a lot of research before I you know, nosedive into this stuff. And I was reading a lot about this stuff. And there were some things that I was reading about his case that I'm just like... This just seems weird. Like, when you guys learn about his victims, and I'll get into details about some of his victims, you'll learn that how was he able to overpower a lot of his victims, besides being, you know, a
big 275 person, pounds.
240.
All right, 240.
So besides being a 240-pound person, a person can still outpower that or find a way to get through that, especially if it's a life or death situation. But when I get into his victims, you'll find out why some of this sounds weird. And... again, when I get into the details, you just think about it. Can a person, I mean, yeah, I can say they can't, but can a person, this type of person, do everything that is listed on here?
Well, unless it involves running a mile, I think he has it covered.
Alrighty, so let me get into it. I just want you guys to keep this in mind, and even my listeners, I want you guys to keep this in mind that, you know, maybe potentially he wasn't alone in this. Right, so as I said, he had 26 of his victims were buried in his crawl space. Well, he had a few of them that were not, and this was kind of sort of his downfall. So Gacy was convicted of 33 murders, was sentenced to death on March 13th, 1980. He spent 14 years on death row before he was executed by lethal injection at State Villa Correction Center on May 10th, 1994 at the age of 52. We were alive when he was executed.
What was that year again?
Do you remember what he said for his...
I'll get there, Joe.
Okay.
I know that one. So he was convicted of one count of sodomy, 33 counts of murder, one count of sexual assault, and one count of indecent liberties with a child. We'll get into why these charges were put into him. Gacy became known as the Killer Clown because his charitable services at fundraising events, parades, and children parties where he would dress up as Pogo the Clown or Patches the Clown, characters that he made up himself in his early life.
Patch was I actually didn't know about Patches. I thought it was just Pogo.
Patches was his first one, and then it was Pogo.
Mm.
So John Wayne Gacy was born in Chicago, Illinois on March 17th, 1942. And
she just showed me a picture of him. Yeah, he's pretty creepy.
Yeah, so we'll actually get into his painting, too, because I wanted to cover his painting.
There's symbolism behind the painting.
Yeah, so we'll go over that a little bit later. So John Wayne Gacy was born in Chicago, Illinois on March 17th, 1942. He was the second child and the only son of three children born to John Stanley Gacy, a mechanic and a World War I veteran, and his wife, Elaine Robinson. As a child, Gacy was overweight and not athletic, much to his father's disappointment. He was a bit of a mama's boy, being very close to his mother and two sisters. Because of this, he didn't have much of a relationship with his father, and his father was also an alcoholic who was physically abusive to his wife and his children. I mean, I don't want to say this, but kind of the stereotypical time back in the day, wanting his nice go-getter son, you know, type of thing.
Football scholarship. Whoa. Yeah,
exactly. He wanted his football boy, and Gacy kind of came out as the opposite.
Yeah, he wanted the Duke, but he didn't get the Duke.
No, he did not get the Duke.
No John Wayne for that guy.
Right. So he wasn't the John Wayne like we grew up and watched. He was kind of the opposite of it. So throughout his childhood, Gacy struggled with his sexuality, stating that he knew he was different, quote unquote, as young as 8 years old. For most of Gacy's childhood, he strove to make his father proud of him, but seldom never reached his approval. One of Gacy's earliest childhood memories was his father beating him with a leather belt at the age of 4, accidentally making a mess when he was putting a cart together. On another occasion, his father struck Gacy so hard with a broomstick it knocked him unconscious. His father regularly belittled him and often compared him to his sisters, disdainfully accusing him of being, call him stupid all the time. That was kind of like his nickname. Gacy never denied ever hating his father, regardless of everything that's happened to him. So during one incident that led him to be bedridden, his mother attempted to shield her son from her father's verbal and physical abuse, but it only backfired. This only earned even more accusation that his son was a sissy or a mama's boy who would probably grow up to be queer, unquote. Or quote, probably end up growing up to be queer, end quote. Those were his exact words. So, Gacy's sister...
You said all the people he killed were men, right?
Boys, yes.
Boys? Jesus.
So, Gacy's sister Karen would later say that the siblings learned to toughen up against the beatings, and Gacy never once cried. In 1949, Gacy was molested by a family friend who would take him on car rides and show him, quote, wrestling tricks, end quote, that would involve putting Gacy's face in his crotch and would force him to stay there for long periods at a time. Gacy never told his father about this incident, as he was afraid that his father would blame him, and he did his best. He did his best to not tell and to keep it all together. He ended up telling his best friend about this. Gacy told his best friend about this that happened to him, and he told him maybe this isn't normal. And he's like, "Well, I have to keep quiet because otherwise my dad would beat me." When Gacy grew up with a heart condition, he was ordered to avoid all sports at all costs at all schools.
There goes that football scholarship.
No football for him. So he's not that football child or that jockey child that most at that time fathers dreamt their sons to be. So he was an average student with few friends, but he was a constant target for bullying throughout his neighborhood. He was a teacher's pet, volunteering at school's truancy office, and to run errands for teachers and neighbors. During this time, which is around the fourth grade, Gacy began experiencing blackouts. He also experienced several seizures, a bursted appendix in 1957, and at the age of 14 to 18, he spent almost a whole year in the hospital all for all these health issues that he had. Yeah, this resulted in him getting failing grades, missing school, and it also unfortunately made his father look down on him even more. So
this guy was failing in school and he still has a super high IQ.
Yes. Oh. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. Remember, this guy had almost like the third or fourth highest IQ when it came to American serial killers here. That being said, his father suspected these episodes were all an effort to gain sympathy and attention and accused him of faking everything so he could do nothing. Basically, he thought he was a lazy ass who just wanted attention. There had been several times Gacy's friends would witness the abuse his father would lash out, and everyone would say that he would never fight back during any fights, both the verbal and physical altercations. In 1960, at the age of 18, Gacy became involved in politics, working as an assistant precinct captain for the Democratic Party candidates. This did not hurt the relationship with his father, but he started to call him a patsy. So
sounds about right.
What does a patsy mean?
Patsy?
I mean, I've heard the insult before, but I don't know exactly what it means.
Let's find out what patsy, like the actual term from it, because patsy is basically supposed to be like an insult, basically almost as bad as calling someone like a pansy.
That's what I've kind of figured, yeah. Right?
So a patsy is a person who's easily taken advantage of, especially by being cheated or blamed for something. So basically like a tool.
Yeah.
So, in the same year, 1960, Gacy continued to work for the Democratic Party. He was able to get a car under his father's name, but he would abuse the title and sometimes take the car away, not allowing him to go to work or even use the car. Gacy grew fed up and, quote, totally sick and drained that once he got the car back, he left the family home and drove all the way to Las Vegas.
Smart man.
Where he found work as an ambulance service and then at a job at Palm Mortuary.
I can't believe I just complimented a serial killer.
Damn. He worked there for only 3 months before returning to Chicago. At the time in Las Vegas when Gacy started to experiment with homosexuality tendencies, while working at the morgue, Gacy slept in a cot behind the embalming room. He would observe the morticians embalming dead bodies and later confess to getting into a coffin with a deceased teenage male, where he embraced and caressed the body before experiencing a sense of shock. Your face is priceless.
That's just creepy as shit.
So, it was this shock that caused Gacy to call his mom and return back home to Chicago with his family. His father and mother welcomed him back, and despite not finishing high school, Gacy was able to enroll in a business college where he graduated in 1963.
Okay.
The same year, Gacy got a job as a management trainee with the Non-Bush Shoe Company.
Non-Bush, but what if you like Bush?
That's what I was about to say.
Oh, my God. Damn it, guys. I'm surrounded by men. Oh my God. I need another female on here.
This is true.
So in 1964, Gacy was transferred to Springfield to work as a salesman. He was promoted to manager before the end of the year, and in the same year, he became engaged to Marilyn Myers, a co-worker in the department he managed. After only 9 months, they were married in September 1964, his first marriage.
It was in the 70s, right?
1964, so close to it.
Okay.
As a result of his marriage, Marilyn's father purchased 3 KFC restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa, for Gacy and his new wife.
Oh, dude, he's definitely making money. Right. Iowa, KFC, hello.
I'm about to get you, tell you how much he was getting. So Mr. and Mrs. Gacy would then move down to Waterloo, Iowa to manage the KFCs. While down in Waterloo, Gacy quickly joined the local JC. For those who don't know what a JC, basically it's a leadership training organization for people who are interested in government.
And what does it mean?
So
JC, you say?
JC.
Yeah.
I don't know if JC stands for anything in particular, but JC basically...
Sounds like the initials of some dude's name.
Well, it's not like J and then C. It's spelled...
Like J-A-Y?
Yeah, J-A-Y-C-E-E, J-C.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's basically it's like a leadership training program for people who are interested in wanting to get into like politics and government. It's like the step up to becoming like mayor and all the stuff in the smaller towns. Some people who are in government now started off as J-C people at younger ages before going up to where they are now.
Okay.
So he worked at the J-C. And it became a tireless worker for the organization. In 1964, JC would then have his second homosexual experience. According to Gacy, this incident happened after one of his colleagues in the JC piled him with drinks and invited him to spend the evening on his sofa.
The colleague piled him with drinks. You mean just gave him like a
bunch of drinks? Pile drive, like, I don't know. He just
pile drive, right? Okay.
Pretty much funneled alcohol into
him. Basically just put like something in his mouth, was like, drink all this.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what happened eventually.
Actually, yes.
So he's pretty much like, shot.
Oh, God,
shots.
Joe. Of all people to hear that.
Then he was like, ho, ho.
Actually, that's not far from the truth because, so he spent the evening on the sofa. The colleague then performed oral sex while he was drunk. He was asleep and woke up to him doing this, but instead of stopping him, he just let him continue.
So the guy was doing it to him?
Yes, yeah. While he was asleep.
Yes, you don't need alcohol for that.
But once finished, Gacy did the same thing back.
Whoa. Okay.
It's only good to reciprocate, right?
He did you a favor, so you do the favor back.
It's only polite to reciprocate. Not necessarily a bad thing.
No homo.
It's being polite, okay?
It's the alcohol. No homo.
It's all the alcohol. It's not gay until the sex touch. So.
True story. I heard that from a guy from jail.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It's true. It's what he told me.
So, the move to Waterloo, Iowa was a huge deal for Gacy. At the time, it would mean Gacy would receive $15,000 a year. All right. But you have to think, this is the 1960s. That is over $115,000 in today's equivalent money.
It's not bad. You're doing pretty good for himself.
That's six digits.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Right there. Like six figures type.
Yeah, six figures. So... Plus, he also, this doesn't include the shares that he got from the profits from the restaurant.
So, it was the earnings and then the profits, pretty much.
Yes. Jeez. So, he had a natural salary of $15,000 a year, which was equivalent to $115,000, and that's not including the profits that would come in from the chain, from the three chains themselves. So, this guy was easily banking in 1 year, probably close to $300,000. For that time. And which is incredible for that time. So while in Waterloo, Gacy managed the KFCs and regularly offered to help at the JCs. On one day, Gacy would work anywhere between 12 to 14 hours in a day. With all the hard work by the end of the year, Gacy served on the board of directors for the Waterloo JC. So he got pretty high up on the JC. While in Waterloo, Gacy's wife gave birth to 2 children, a boy named Michael, who was born in February 1966, followed by their daughter Christine in March 1967. So they were pretty close to in age. Gacy himself later described this period of his life as perfect, adding that he finally earned the long-sought approval from his father. On one occasion in July 1966, Gacy's parents paid a visit to Iowa, during which Gacy Sr. apologized privately to his son for the physical and mental abuse he had inflicted on him throughout his childhood before proudly informing him, quote, son, I was wrong about you, end quote. So supposedly.
And then that was probably the switch that knocked everything out of the fucking ball.
Probably.
That was a bad expression.
The stressor.
Yeah, that was definitely like the boom.
Well, you also have to think. You have to think of the tendencies.
Yeah, but see, he's been trying to impress his father his whole life. He finally impresses his father. Now he's going to go do what the fuck he wanted to do.
Now he has nothing else to try to. I don't want to say nothing to live for, but he already got that approval that that he was seeking for, and now it is something I guess a little bit different now. So. It's like the thing that we were talking about with Yelly a long time ago when we covered another serial killer. Whether this is nature or nurture, we go back to that topic again. And people have always wondered that when it comes to serial killers, are people born to be serial killers? Or are they nurtured that way? And we go back to the whole thing that there is something called a killer gene, that people can be born with something called a killer gene, but it's whether the environment around you causes that killer gene to come out and makes it more prominent than all your other genes.
I think that's a bit of shenanigans, in my opinion. I believe that all humans are born violent. That's my opinion.
That's the killer gene.
And because I guess you could say because of the environment that people are in is whether it's triggered or not. I guess I do have the same belief actually.
Yeah. So that's what a lot of people believe it is nowadays. I mean a lot of science points to that as well. So it's pretty hard to dispute that when you have all the science and all this proof that's popping up in front of you. But it's whatever it is. I would love to have a conversation. What about this whole nature nurture thing when it comes to serial killers? So
yeah, it's not like you can just dissect their brain when they die.
Which they've tried.
Yeah.
Every serial killer, like they've taken Ted Bundy's brain after it's fried. I'm not sure what else they were able to get from it. Ted Bundy's brain. They took Jeffrey Dahmer's brain. They took his brain as well, and they dissected it to see if they can find anything abnormal that came from it. But it's a brain. I mean, what are you going to get from it after they're gone? What you need is from when they're still alive, and you do all those tests on them, and like have.
Maybe that's why it took them 13 years for him to get to the chair.
Actually, it's more like appeals. However, behind closed doors of the JC life, there was something dark going on. You thought it was perfect?
We wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't dark.
Exactly. So, let's see. So, there's a lot of things that was involved. So, it's politics. We all know how dirty politics are. I don't care what anyone says. There is no one politician out there that's not dirty. Always. They have some sort of something. They're involved in something. So behind these closed doors, there was things such as wife swapping. There was prostitution, pornographic stuff. Even child pornography was getting thrown around. And, of course, drug use. So Gacy was deeply involved in many of these activities and regularly cheated on his wife with local prostitutes, both male and female, mostly male. He was also known to have opened a club in his basement where he allowed his employees to drink alcohol and play pool. Although Gacy employed teenagers of both sexes at his restaurant, he socialized only with the young male employees. Many were given alcohol before Gacy had sexual advances toward them. He denied all claims and claimed that all were jokes and a test of people's morals.
Of course.
Of course. I have to test to see how much of a manly man you are. Will you refuse me? Let's find out. So, in August 1967, Gacy committed his first known sexual assault on a teenage boy, Donald Vohier. Vohier. I think that's how you say his name, Vohier. He was 15 years old and the son of a fellow JC member. I don't know why I keep using this word, piled. So he ended up giving Vohier a bunch of drugs and alcohol and let him watch a bunch of pornographic films. I can speak, I swear. So he gave him alcohol, drugs, and let him watch pornographic films in his basement when he persuaded the youth to perform oral sex on him. Over the following months, several other youths were sexually abused in similar manners. This didn't last long because in March 1968, Vohier reported to his father that Gacy had sexually assaulted him. Vohier's father immediately informed the police and Gacy was arrested and charged with oral sodomy.
But that wasn't the end.
Of course, there's more.
24 bodies at least.
Oral sodomy, huh?
Yes, oral sodomy.
So, okay, never mind.
Do you not know what the true meaning of sodomy is?
No, I don't know what the true meaning of sodomy is.
So, sodomy means some sort of penetration. Sodomy is sexual encounters involving anal or oral. Yeah, just anal or oral.
Interesting.
Yes. So, usually involves a penis. Or a foreign object. Oral sodomy. So Gacy publicly denied any and all wrongdoings and insisted the charges against him were politically motivated due to his stature in the JC. Fortunately, on May 10th, 1968, Gacy was found guilty of the sodomy charges. On September 12th, Gacy was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation at a psychiatric hospital at the State University of Iowa. Two doctors have examined Gacy over a period of 17 days before concluding he had antisocial personality disorder.
What the fuck?
Ow! Sorry. Yes. Antisocial personality disorder. You don't know what antisocial personality disorder is.
I guess not, but that just sounds stupid.
It's not what it sounds like, okay? So antisocial personality disorder just means that they have a hard time registering emotions.
I have that then. That's dumb. I'm sorry. Those guys are stupid. This guy should have been put to jail in the beginning. There's nothing crazy about him. Throw him in prison.
Alrighty, so...
There's a lot antisocial about him, but I mean...
Well, okay, when you hear antisocial, you just think antisocial. They're not social people. That's...
No, I'm thinking he doesn't get along with society. That's what I'm guessing.
Okay, so antisocial personality disorder are for people who may have low... They show this usually as kids... they tend to lie, break laws, act impulsively, and lack regards to their own safety or the safety of others. I don't think that's you.
No, that's not
exactly. So people who are usually diagnosed with anti-personality disorder or antisocial personality disorder are people who tend to lie all the time, are people who think of only of themselves, of people who, even though they're caught in a lie.
But that's considered a disease? That doesn't make sense.
It is. There's so many mental diseases out there that this is considered a disease called the antisocial personality disorder. But it doesn't mean anything. Just
sounds more like a personality than a disease.
Well, or a disorder.
It's a disorder. Thank you, or a disorder. Yeah, it is a disorder. So there's a difference between disorder and disease.
Oh, my bad. I meant disorder.
Yeah. So antisocial personality disorder is something that is, there's a lot of it. And most serial killers have this because they lack empathy. They lack the ability to really relate to their victims. So they think what they're doing to them, they either blame it on the person and refuse to think that what they did was something wrong.
Or they try to justify it in some way.
Exactly. Or sometimes they'll lie on top of a lie to try to make themselves look good. So, okay. Yeah. So antisocial personality disorder is actually not as common. It's mostly common in, like, most sociopaths or psychopaths, such as serial killers and stuff like that. But there are high functioning people to this day out in society who do have this, because you can still function with these disorders. It just depends on how you handle it and how you take care of it. But then you also have to think, this was in the 1960s.
That's true.
Anything that was mentally wrong with you, instantly they were just like, they wanted nothing to do with it. They were really bad with anything that was mental, like PTSD, depression, and all that stuff to them was just like, they didn't know how to handle it back in the day. Let's see. They also concluded that he was mentally competent to stand trial. So a lot of his... Sorry, let me jump back. So two doctors had examined Gacy over a period of 17 days before concluding he had antisocial personality disorder, which was likely to benefit from any therapy or medical treatment, and that his behavior patterns were likely to bring him into a repeated conflict with society. So the two psychiatrists were just like, he's going to be a repeat offender if we don't keep him locked up. The doctors also concluded that he was mentally competent to stand trial. This was part of his psychiatric evaluation and a direct quote from his doctor. So this is a direct quote from his actual psych eval. So this is a direct quote from his quote from the psychiatric evaluation. Quote, "The most striking aspect of the test results is the patient's total denial of responsibility for everything that has happened to him. He can produce an alibi for everything. He presents himself as the victim of circumstance and blames other people who are out to get him. The patient attempts to assume sympathetic response by depicting himself as being at the mercy of a hostile environment," end quote. basically, he was saying, it's not me, it's them.
Yeah.
Refused to accept anything. That is his constant MO through everything. Upon advisory from his attorney, Gacy entered a plea deal of guilty to one count of sodomy in relation to the charge filed against him by Donald Vonier. He pleaded not guilty to the other charges against him by other youths at a formal arraignment held in November 17, 1968. Before the judges, Gacy stated that he and Vonier had engaged in sexual relations, but insisted Vonier had offered sexual services that he just acted out of curiosity. So again, victim blaming here. Drum roll. Okay. This is funny. So, you guys won't believe this, right? So, here it is. Instead, his lawyer just was trying to cut a deal. So, they were like, hey, if we pleaded guilty, what is the lowest sentence that you're willing to give him? His lawyer was just trying to get him probation. In the end,
they let him out free.
So, I wish there was a lot more that they would have done. So, drum roll. In result, instead of probation, which was what Gacy and his lawyer were aiming for, on December 3rd, 1968, he was sentenced to 10 years at the Aramosa State Penitentiary. To add salt to the wound, on the day of his sentencing, his wife petitioned for divorce. Requesting possession of everything.
And she deserves it.
The house, all properties, the cars, the KFC, and even full custody of their two children and alimony payments.
I don't know about the alimony payments. Just take everything. Yes. That doesn't need to be in your life anymore.
So, how do you think it went? Like, do you think that was, like, a good punishment, right? Like, that's how it should have been, right?
That's what I feel, yeah.
So, the court all ruled in her favor, and the divorce was finalized on September 18th, 1969. But this would be the last time that he'd ever see his ex-wife and his children ever again.
Oh.
So he would never see them again. In fact, the wife went in and changed their names.
Smooth move.
Did everything to get away from him.
Smart woman.
So, while incarcerated, Gacy was a model prisoner.
Of course,
he's a coward.
Yes. So within months of being in the prison, he became head chef. He joined the inmate JC chapter and increased the number of people that there by a lot. I think it was like tripled the amount of people that were there. So he got a lot of people involved in politics. What he was able to do while in prison was pretty insane. While in prison, JC was able to complete his 16 high school courses to finally obtain his diploma in November 1969. He also applied for parole on early release, but was denied once. On Christmas Day 1969, Gacy's father died from cirrhosis of the liver. I'm sure what you guys know cirrhosis of the liver is, right?
I understand.
Drink too much too fucking much alcohol.
Yeah, too much drinking.
So, it was pretty fucked up. JC was told that his father died 2 days after he passed. So, he didn't learn about his dad passing until 2 days after he had already passed.
Good.
When he heard this news, Gacy was said to have collapsed to the floor, sobbing uncontrollably, and had to be supported by prison staff. Gacy requested compassionate leave from the prison to attend his father's funeral in Chicago, but his request was denied.
Ouch. Yes. That sucks.
Good! I'm sorry, this guy lost all his rights.
Right, he should have. So, now, are you guys ready for some eye rolling?
Yeah. So, I know it's coming.
Yep. Gacy was granted parole within 12 months of his... He was granted parole only serving 18 months of his 10-year service.
What the fuck?
Because yes. He's a model citizen.
He was a model citizen. And he was granted parole, and he was just given, wait for it, only 12 months of probation.
That's our justice system. That's so stupid.
Yes. So they deemed that he was savable and that he would be a good citizen. We can release him back out and he will be a taxpayer and do everything that they want every normal human being to do. And they thought he was sane. I think not. Do not be deceived, because they apparently were. So, two of the conditions in his probation was that Gacy would have to relocate to Chicago to live with his mother, and that he was to observe a 10 p.m. curfew with regular updates for 12 months only. So, every month he had to update where he was doing his probation.
Which, of course, he did.
Right. So, once released, he returned to Chicago and obtained a job as a short order cook in a restaurant. This was short-lived. On February 12th, 1971, Gacy was charged with sexually assaulting a teenage boy. So, not long.
I guess he didn't do it.
There's a kicker. So the youth claimed that Gacy had lured him into his car at a Greyhound bus terminal and drove him to Gacy's house, where he attempted to force the youth into sex. This charge was dismissed and dropped when the youth failed to appear in court. This would have violated his parole, but the parole board didn't learn about this until 8 months later, after his probation had already ended. So there was nothing they could do about it.
It's all that paperwork, and then they give him a window.
And then on top of that, if you really think about it, this was back in the day before computers. So there was no way for them to share that this had happened, or they even know that he was on probation. By then, Gacy's probation had already ended and there was nothing they could do. The next month, any and all of Gacy's records in Iowa were sealed and locked for no one to view. So they completely were just like, let's pretend this never happened.
See, that there is very suspicious.
It's super suspicious. Yeah, it's super shady. It's super shady. That's the justice system for you. So,
but he's a good guy. I mean, wouldn't you just like let a
no
little bit of a
no?
We're gonna get into that even more. So, with financial assistance from his mom, Gacy bought a house in Norwood Park Township. In the address is 821 West Somerdale Avenue. It is where he would reside until he's arrested in December 1978, and where he is known all his murders were committed. It's actually not technically a standing house anymore. They've torn it down and rebuilt it, so their area is still there, and they changed the address.
Bitch, well, shit's haunted.
With all the...
yeah. It's super haunted.
Oh, so. Dude, that's next episode.
So, in 1971, Gacy moved into the house, and shortly after, his new fiance moved in with him.
What the fuck?
1 week before Gacy's wedding, in June 22nd, he was arrested and charged with aggravated battery and reckless conduct. Jackie D. informed the police that Gacy impersonated a police officer and flashed a sheriff badge, lured him into a car, and forced him to perform oral sex. These charges were eventually dropped. Again, because of failure to show. Charges what cannot be...
Well, you also have to consider the time. I mean, if you're a male and you're
doing homosexual tendencies or homosexual stuff with other people, that's like something that's going to be put on your head forever.
Yeah, and not only that, but your social standing would also be put down too, and
you're seen as way. You're not even seen as an individual or person anymore.
Yeah. So it's kind of BS, but that's kind of how things were during that time.
Yeah. So Gacy was a class A neighbor, and everyone loved him. Not long after moving into his house and getting married, he quit his job working as a cook and started his own construction business known as PDM. Construction, standing for painting, decorating, and maintenance.
PDM.
Yes.
Trying to think of something clever with that one. I'll get back to you.
So, he had his own company now. By 1978, his business expanded and he was making over $200,000 annually. That's in that time, again, equivalent. That is over $1.1 million to today's money.
What the hell?
So, this guy knew business. He was smart and he knew how to get money. In 1973...
And he finished school or didn't finish
school? He did finish school. Okay. When he was in prison, he managed to get his high school diploma and he got his business.
He got his, like, a GED or equivalent to high school diploma.
So, in 1973, Gacy and a teenage employer of PDM traveled to Florida to look for real estate to expand his business But Gacy had another motive. At the first night in Florida, Gacy raped the youth in the hotel room. The youth refused to stay the night in the hotel room and actually slept the remaining of the nights on the beach. Upon returning to Chicago, the employee drove to Gacy's house and started to beat him up. Gacy's mother-in-law stopped the youth from further attacking Gacy, and he drove away. Gacy explained to his wife that the attack happened because he had refused to pay him for poor quality work. No charges were ever filed on both sides.
Oh my God.
God damn it, dude.
Yes. So it's
like, I'm gonna beat that ass for him beating my ass.
Basically, that's what ended up happening. So it was a dirty, dirty case.
Yeah.
Dirty, dirty boys.
And then the wife being like, "What was that about?" I was like, "Oh, it's because I didn't pay him."
Yeah, that's what's his excuse. So everyone in the community considered Gacy to be hardworking, helpful. He was volunteering a lot of his free time to help the neighborhood free of charge. This is when Pogo the Clown was made. In the late 1975, Gacy joined the Jolly Jokers Clown Club, and he made his own performance character again, Pogo the Clown and Patches the Clown. Gacy designed his own costumes and taught himself how to apply clown makeup. Although some professional clowns noted that his painting was always done wrong. Here's why. Mm-hmm. Gacy's borders were pointed.
Sharp.
And sharp. This was known to scare kids because it made them look more scary, more fearsome, versus clowns are supposed to look nice and friendly. So that's soft, why if you look at most, lines. Mostly you look at clowns, they have the soft rounded lines. So that way it's not as scary. But he insisted that his clown makeup had to have, that's how he had wanted and always wanted it. So, and then Gacy designed his own costumes and taught himself how to apply the clown makeup. Gacy painted all his edges with sharp points. Gacy is known to have performed as Pogo or Patches at numerous local parties, Democratic Party functions, charitable events, and even went to children's hospitals. Several times he would show up in his favorite drinking hole as a clown, and this only barely covers who John Wayne Gacy really was as an individual. So he... like had alternate personalities is what people would say.
Like you as Pogo, he would have a different personality than if he were just regular John Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gacy's life was turning around, and by 1975, Gacy had told his wife that he was bisexual. Sorry. He's bisexual. After the couple had sex on Mother's Day that year, he informed her that this would be the last time that they would ever have sex. He began spending most evenings away from the house, only returning in the early hours in the mornings with excuses he had been working late. His wife observed Gacy bringing teenage boys into their garage and also found gay pornographic stuff inside the house. They divorced by mutual consent in March 1976.
Whoa.
Yes. So it was only a matter of time before Gacy's old tendencies would come out, and it happened on January 2nd, 1972. Gacy picked up 16-year-old Timothy Jack McCoy from another bus terminal. Gacy took McCoy, who was not originally from Chicago, on a sightseeing tour and ended up taking him home. Gacy offered McCoy could stay the night, and he would drive him back to the bus station in the morning. McCoy accepted. According to Gacy, later account on the murder, he awoke in the morning to find McCoy standing in his bedroom doorway with a kitchen knife.
Ooh, that's what it was.
Yes. Gacy leapt from his bed, and McCoy raised both arms in the air as a gesture of surrendering, tilting the knife upward and accidentally cutting Gacy's forearm. Gacy actually has a scar on his arm to support this account. He then twisted the knife from McCoy's wrist, hanged his head against the bedroom wall, kicked him against the wardrobe, and walked toward him. McCoy then kicked him in the stomach, and Gacy grabbed the youth, wrestled him to the floor, and stabbed him repeatedly in the chest as he straddled his body. Gacy claimed he then went to the kitchen knife and saw that he had cooked breakfast for both of them.
Yep.
So yes. It was an accident?
It was an accident. He came walking in with a knife, and Gacy panicked, thinking that he was going to do something to him when he originally was just going there to asking him and let him know, hey, breakfast is ready.
With a knife?
Yeah. I mean, that was a little awkward that he had a knife with him, but you know, sometimes you know how you walk like with a spatula or something to tell something, and I guess in this case he had a knife, which freaked out Gacy. So McCoy had also set up the table for two, and he'd walk to Gacy's room to wake him up and give him breakfast. Gacy would then bury McCoy's body in the crawl space and later covered his grave with a layer of concrete.
Damn.
That was his first victim. In an interview...
No, he has many victims. That's his first murder.
His first murder, yes. So in an interview with after his arrest, Gacy stated that immediately after killing McCoy, he felt totally drained and yet noticed that he had experienced the most mind-numbing orgasm as he killed the youth. He added this, that's when I realized that death was the ultimate thrill. So Gacy later stated that the second time he committed murder was around January 1974. The victim is believed to have been an unidentified teen youth with medium brown hair, estimated between the ages of 14 and 18, when Gacy strangled him before stowing his body in his closet prior to burial. Gacy later stated that the fluids leaked out of the teen's mouth and nose as he was stored in the closet, staining his carpet. As a result of this experience, Gacy later stated that he regularly stuffed cloths or rags in his victims or their victims' own underwear in their mouths to prevent any reoccurring of this incident. The particular this particular unidentified victim was buried about 15 feet from the barbecue pit in Gacy's backyard. He is still considered unidentified to this day. In 1975, Gacy's business grew rapidly. At the same time, he began to increase the frequency of his excursions for sex with young males. He would often refer to them as his cruising or his cruising years. Gacy made it a thing to mostly hire high school students and young men for PDM. One of them was 15-year-old Anthony Anucci. I'm so bad with names.
Sounds Italian.
Yeah, I was about to say.
In July 1975, Gacy visited Anthony. I don't really want to say his last name because I'm just really bad with it. While he was at home alone, Gacy had alcohol and again plied the youth with alcohol. Once he was drunk enough, he wrestled him to the floor and cuffed his hands behind his back. The cuffs on his wrists were loose enough for him to free his hand and to handcuff loose enough for him to free his arm from the handcuff after Gacy had left the room. When Gacy returned, Anthony pounced on him and wrestled Gacy to the floor, obtained possession of the handcuff keys, and cuffed Gacy's hand behind his back. Gacy screamed threats and calmed down and promised to leave if Anthony removed the handcuffs. He agreed, and Gacy left the house. Only 1 week after the attempted...
What?
Yes.
No!
Yes.
I know I just tried to sexually assault you, but if you uncuff me, I will leave your house.
And pretend like this never happened. You also have to think.
I know, different era.
He was also 15 years old, drinking, pornography, drugs. He's going to get his ass beat.
And
homosexuality.
And Gacy score is at 20, so he's apparently got a plus 5 to his
He's
his
able persuasion. To like persuade people to be like, hey.
And he's proficient with it, with expertise, so...
Don't kill D&D for me.
This isn't another natural 20, okay?
So yeah,
it's
pretty much.
Like a natural 20.
I hear power was just like, okay, so roll me a persuasion. And then he rolled that persuasion with a natural 20. And the guy's like, okay, so the 15-year-old unlocks you from your cuffs and 14. You walk out. 15, okay, so the 15-year-old teenager unlocks you from the thing and you walk out.
Alrighty, so... Yeah. 1 week after his attempted assault on Ananucci in July 29th, 1975, another of Gacy's employees, 17-year-old John Bovlishki?
Sounds Russian.
Yeah. Disappeared. The day before his disappearance, John had threatened Gacy over 2 weeks outstanding back pay. Gacy later admitted to luring John to his home to settle this issue of overdue wages. Gacy strangled him to death and buried his body underneath the concrete floor of his garage. Once he disappeared, his family searched for him and Gacy claimed he had ran away. Gacy was questioned, but nothing was found. Over the following 3 years, John's parents called the police more than 100 times, urging them to investigate Gacy further. They never did.
Because the glove didn't fit, that's why.
Oh my god, this is not an OJ thing, Joe. The glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, deceiving his victims into donning handcuffs became Gacy's MO, or modus operandi. In subduing his victims, after giving them loads of drinks, alcohols, and gaining their trust, Gacy would produce a pair of handcuffs, which he would persuade intended victims to try them on and challenge them to break free from the cuffs. With his victims cuffed and unable to free themselves, Gacy would then make a statement to the effect of, the trick is you have to have the key before producing the then proceeding to rape and torture his captives. He would then finish with the rope trick, placing a rope over his victim's neck and trying to make a makeshift tourniquet until the victim was strangled to death.
Did he have a hat trick?
Just a rope trick, Joe.
Okay.
No hat trick.
No, it's a sports reference.
I know what a hat trick is,
okay.
Joe.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
So, the majority of Gacy's murder was committed between 1976 to 1978. These years would be later referred to as his cruising years. He had a whole house to himself with his wife leaving, and only 1 month after his divorce was finalized, Gacy's reign of terror started with full force. Gacy's chaos included abduction, rape, and murder over a 2-year period. Young man disappeared without a trace. Sort of. In the book Killer Clown, the John Wayne Gacy murdered by Terry Sylvan and Peter T. McLean, Gacy told the investigators there are four Johns. The twisted serial killer claims that there was a John, that John the contractor, John the clown, John the politician, and the fourth personality was named Jack Henley. Gacy said that Jack was the real killer who did all of the evil things. During his pre-trial statement, Gacy argued that he didn't realize the boys were dead until he woke up the next day and was led to believe that Jack had committed the murders. Later, he attempted to rationalize his actions by saying that the boys had killed themselves with ropes around their necks. Gacy was a master manipulator who thrilled to get complete control over those who he interacted with. In his own sinister words, he confessed that, "I lost count of how many I killed." Years later, during a conversation with detectives while he was under surveillance, Gacy discussed his work as a clown, remarking, "Clowns can get away with murder." Until the next episode. Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 dun.
Joker.
So, yes. That's just the first half of it, as you guys may have caught on. This is going to be a two-parter. So, the second half, we're going to get into all of his victims, what he does to all of his victims, details, detail, details, because I like details. Other than that, what do you guys think of the first half? You guys just learned a bit about Gacy and his two first victims.
It's creepy that you idolize him.
I don't idolize him.
Maybe that's the wrong word. But
that is so the wrong word, because I don't
idolize. It's creepy that you like him, period.
It's creepy.
It's creepy that... What you mean is you find it creepy that she finds interest in...
Or some kind of fascination with that.
With serial killers.
That's a little creepy. But you're my sister and I kind of love you.
kind of love you. That's the title. You're my sister and I kind of love you.
Yes! I took that one today.
James is like, I got the title for that
title
one.
Got me today. Woo!
James is, I'm the title guy today.
It's
so, going to
be like Peralta each episode.
That's the name of her sex tape. It's the name of your sex tape.
I kind of love you.
I kind of love you.
You're right. My sister and I kind of love you. No, that's bad. That's so bad.
Thinking of it that way is so bad.
That's kind of the thing now. Every time you open up Pornhub, though, it's just like, man. It's like, you're, oh, my sister, stepsister.
And I kind of love you.
Hey, a stepsister's different, man.
They may not even be related.
Yeah, they're not related. As long as it's not related.
Stepsisters are fine. Half-sisters, no. Yeah, no. Because there's relation there. Mm-hmm. But stepsisters?
There's blood.
Bruh.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Wait. Two stepsisters or two half-sisters going at it? Because that could be kind of hot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're half-sisters. They're still related. It's
still incest.
No.
Still kind of hot.
Still incest.
Still kind of hot.
Oh, my God.
Hey, shut up. You like Loki and Thor. Don't give me that.
I like what?
Thors?
Loki and Thor.
They're not actual brothers.
They still grew up together.
They're like stepbrothers. We were just talking about that. Anyway, so yeah, this is a two-parter. The second part will come out next week on the next time it's uploaded. So what'd you think of the first part of learning about Gacy?
I knew a little bit about the motherfucker, but
there was some stuff that I found, some stuff that I learned about. And then there are other things where I'm just like, I thought it was the other way around.
Like what?
Yeah, like his first murder, which was with him accidentally killing the...
Well, yeah, I mean...
So I thought it was the other way around, where he
that was a creep.
Stabbed him, like he used a knife and stabbed him multiple times in the evening, and then woke up in the morning with him trying to, like, escape or something.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but no. Yeah, now
that's something else. Yeah. You're gonna hear about that one later. So remember, he has a lot of victims, and his first victim, by all accounts, he said was a complete accident.
Mm-hmm.
The guy literally was making him breakfast, and he put two and two together. He killed someone who just was trying to be nice to him and repeat back for the things that he did for them. He never admitted to them having, like, sex or anything like that, and obviously by the time they found the body, it was too decayed to even know. But they were able to see that he was stabbed a lot.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is all coming from Wayne himself, right?
Yeah, Gacy.
Yeah, so, I mean, the guy was a compulsive liar, so we can't even take that for consideration.
Right,
exactly. So,
right.
Like, I don't know. Like, if it did happen the way it happened, then that's one crazy twist of fate.
Well, the only reason why they kind of agreed, or, like, they kind of took what he said to face value on the first one, is because none of his victims died the same way that this guy died. All his victims after this guy died, and he will later say, and it's somewhere in my notes.
That's because this guy had a knife and was not handcuffed.
Well, it would later state also in the episodes that the one reason why he didn't continue killing people with knives is because it was too dirty to clean up.
So, you did mention that.
Yeah. So he was someone who didn't like to do a lot of cleaning up, so strangulation was kind of like the least dirtiest of them all. So, yeah, you just learn a lot about his characteristics with his MO. So, but again, at that time, I mean, if this stuff was happening now during this time, if we had a serial killer that was basically like a copycat trying to do everything that John Wayne Gacy was doing at the time, the guy would be caught before there was even 20 some off victims.
The guy was already caught. Our justice system let him go. That was the problem.
Well, he was caught not killing someone.
He was caught raping somebody and only gave, what was it, 12 months out of 10 years?
18 months after 10 for 10 years of, so, yeah.
I mean, damn. That's, I mean, our justice system. Well, that's the 70s justice system, I should say.
The justice system still is to this day where they believe that people can be corrected, because that's what it's called, a correctional facility, is to correct their behavior to make them become citizens, civilized citizens, to come out and again, and to change their lives and to become normal citizens. To think that every person who goes into jail is not willing or can't change
I believe that some people can change. I'm actually hoping for that myself.
Yeah, which is what they did with Gacy. They figured, oh, well, he can change, because before this, he didn't have a record. He didn't have anything. He never showed any of these tendencies before. So they thought maybe it was a one-time thing. So
A one-off.
And then what happens? It's not. It's you take that chance. That is John Wayne Gacy. I hope you guys enjoyed the first part of that. And next week is part two. Yes. So, yeah, that is the end of part one of John Wayne Gacy. I hope you guys enjoyed that. We will be back next week with a part two of John Wayne Gacy. Until then, you guys, go ahead and give, you know, Shannon's podcast a listen to. Again, that's Shiitake Podcast. They talk about anime. If you guys like to contact us or share any of your stories with us, please contact us on any social media, such as Instagram, Facebook, or even email us at teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com. And until then, stay spooky, y'all.
Happy haunting.
Thanks for showing up.
You have to think of something. I have to think of
something. I say. It was like, fuck! And I was just like, fuck, I'm looking at my phone.
Right? You have to think of something now. Because I say stay spooky, y'all. Joe says happy haunting.
Blah.
Just don't die.
Just don't die, yeah. Don't like serial killers. They're weird people. My sister's very weird. It's okay, though. Because we kind of love her.
Bye.